Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we get into the topical economics news of the week and at the moment. And there's been a couple of things that are going on, but for today, we're mainly going to be talking about what's going on the African continent and, you know, the type of business confidence that's actually going on and whether all of that actually translates to possible economic growth on the ground. And to help us to unpack all of the issues and to shed some light just around some of the research that's actually being done around the African economy, we are joined by Lulu Krugel, who is the chief economist at PwC South Africa. Good day to you, Lulu, once again.
Thank you, Mudiwa. Great to join you guys once again.
I think before we look out into what's actually going on in the rest of the continent, perhaps we can just spend some quick minutes just talking about what's happened this week, because there's been a couple of news announcements in terms of the economy on the local front, and usually people, you know, see South Africa sort of being an anchor economy for the continent. So what happens here usually sort of reverberates in the rest of the region. So the first one is just around GDP. We had some quick numbers that came out earlier this week. What's actually going on that front, and do you see it as really that much of a positive?
You look at Stats SA's interpretation, but the economy is about 1.1% bigger than it was in the last quarter of last year. So that is great news. If you do look at it on a year-on-year basis, so if you compare the first quarter this year with the first quarter last year, the economy is still smaller. And I suppose that is understandable, given that we saw the lockdowns actually kicking in towards the very last part of the first quarter of last year. So the economy is still contracted by about 3%, or just over 3% if you compare it. But I think for me the interesting thing was when I actually compared the size of the economy, so looked at the real output and what we're producing in rand terms, it's more or less the same than what we saw in 2016. So we have a long way to go. But the good news is that we are in fact seeing that there's growth in the economy. There's more activity happening. So I think the story that the unemployment numbers tell us is unfortunately that the economy from an employment side is recovering slower than the rest of the economy, in fact. And, you know, if you look at it from a GDP growth perspective, and the companies and CEOs of companies are, in fact, concerned and not wanting to hire people at this point in time, because they are, in fact, worried about where things will be going in the future, and that certainty is not there yet.
Now, Lulu, just now you did bring up that issue of, load shedding, and I'm very curious to maybe get a sense from you against the backdrop of, the state of the economy that you've just given to us at the moment. Yesterday, the president sort of came out, gave just a speech around the state of the economy, but also talking about, power generation, all of these things. Well, you know, what does that do in terms of, inspiring, I don't know, whether is it confidence in the economy, confidence in the local power utility in terms of meeting power demand? Like, you know, what do you make of the president's statements from yesterday?
I think, you know, it was really important, actually, what he said yesterday. You just mentioned getting demand back up in the economy, actually get people investing and producing again. And the availability of electricity supply is probably one of the most important factors that we can look at. And to be very honest, you know, except for the rollout of the vaccines this year, probably the most important factor is the availability of electricity. And over the short to medium term, and even the long term, we view it as the most important factor for the recovery of the economy and where we will be going. So, to be quite honest, if we want to get where we are currently stuck around a 1% growth, if everything goes well, we don't have COVID, et cetera, all of that happening, the one thing that we can fix is the electricity supply, and that we should fix. So that would make a big difference in the future direction of where the growth in the economy will be going, whether or not we will in fact see us being able to get anywhere near any of the growth rates that are in the National Development Plan and that can really address the unemployment issues that we're sitting with in the country. So yes, the announcement that he made yesterday evening, I think, sends a message to a lot of the investors.
Now, Lulu, just as a quick follow-up to, you know, all of that stuff, increasing limits on, you know, power generation, all of that stuff, would you say that this is sort of like a tacit, admitting that the National Power Utility just can't handle the type of growth that South Africa needs to have to get back to where it was before COVID-19 sort of wiped out what was going on?
The government would not really, I think they would be very careful to send that message at this point in time. You know, I think it's important for them to show that they are still in control of what is happening, and they can fix Eskom, but I think the message is that it will take significantly longer than what they initially anticipated, and I think that what they've told us as South Africans as well. So the message is important to say that the private sector is needed, and I think that is a big thing at this point in time in terms of our economic recovery as well, is to understand that the private sector is in fact needed to get the economy back onto its feet. So although I would not say that it's in any sense, you know, a message to say that we've lost control, we don't know what's going on, we can't fix the electricity supplier, I think it is still a message that's sent out to private sector to say, we need you and your help would be much appreciated in addressing the electricity crisis in the country.
Now, one certainly hopes that that there will be that response from the private sector to actually come to the fore and, you know, help, you know, wherever they can. Hopefully that will help to ease part of the burden on the side of, the National Power Utility, because not only are they supplying here in South Africa, but they do export some of that electricity to neighboring countries. And speaking of those neighboring countries, we understand that PwC recently put out its Africa Business Agenda for 2021. And, you know, what are you guys seeing from that point of view? What is it telling you about either neighboring economies, the African economy, and how does South Africa stack up just based on some of what you guys have been able to gather from the research?
Well, I think the one thing that we really see, I suppose, that is very positive is that there's a significant view that the economy will improve and the economic outlook is significantly better over the next couple of months. But what has actually, you know, jumped out to me is that even though we do see that improvement, African business leaders are still, you know, very careful about when and where they make their spending decisions. And it is still lagging behind the rest of the world. I spoke to one of my colleagues that is based in China earlier this week, and she just told me about the activity there. You know, it was 10 o'clock at night, and she said to me if she leaves the office now, she wouldn't be able to find a taxi because there's just so much going on. And the interesting thing is if I speak to my counterparts in the UK or in the US, all firms are at this point in time looking for growth. And I think in Africa that is true as well. But I do feel that we are more careful. We are much more considerate. And I do hope that it does not mean that these growth opportunities that are happening globally will in fact pass us by, or we would be too slow to actually benefit from that. I think we've been hit hard over the last couple of years. you know, with what has been happening in the global economy, especially if you look at South Africa and Nigeria, two of the largest sub-Saharan African economies. It's a different story in some other countries. And, you know, to be quite honest, at this point in time, when you look at the impact of COVID, the impact has been significantly less on those countries that are less integrated in the global economy. And the footing that you were on just before COVID actually plays an enormous role in the ability of a country to bounce back. If we look at East Africa, you know, a place like Rwanda, or even if we look at Ghana and Kenya, you know, the growth that we're expected to see from there looks very different from some other economies like South Africa, for example.
And against that backdrop then, because you're sort of saying that there's a, I don't know what word to use, but sort of like a dovish sort of approach that's been taken by, you know, African businesses, because of everything that's going on, do you think COVID-19 has reaffirmed for African countries to sort of, you know, for at least the ones, like you said, the ones that have been a bit reluctant or have not been as globally integrated. Do you think COVID-19 has sort of given them the impetus to decide, okay, we need to trade more with the world if we're going to grow, or does it, you know, keep people sort of huddled, you know, amongst themselves to say, the global economy is a bit dangerous. We are going to, you know, stay here and do our own thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, the irony is, even before COVID, we saw this trend of companies looking inward, countries looking inward to say that we're going to address our own needs and we must focus more on manufacturing locally. And localization has been a key point, in the economic recovery, and the plans that governments have put on the table. So ironically, I think, you know, there is a very strong drive from countries as well. And even if you look again, I want to say Europe and I want to say in the US, you know, if we look at funding options available to companies, a lot of them are looking at local banks and are saying we need to actually look at what is happening, you know, locally, and can we not actually meet or actually fulfill our demand locally. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, because we're probably at a time where we need to work together globally a lot more. But ironically, the countries that can actually, you know, meet their own demand, are able to continue on their own, they are the ones that's doing fairly well. And it's actually kind of ironic, but I do not believe that we will be able to, and no country in the world actually will be able to meet its own demand fully on everything. So even if we do talk localization, if we do talk about manufacturing locally, there's significant, you know, from economists, there's a significant focus as well to say, but wait a minute, we can't do everything ourselves. We can't import everything. We can't manufacture everything. So it's a fine balance that I think that we will have to find over the next couple of months and years even. And it's going to be tricky. And you know, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of politics involved. And I suppose that at the end of the day, it should be just about, not just about, but another thing that should play a role, or a significant role, is does it make economic sense actually for us to manufacture locally, to export, to import? All of those things have come to the front over the last couple of years. And I think with COVID, with the disruption of supply chains, it's been even more so.
And against the backdrop of those supply chains, because I understand that as part of the data that was collected, you guys were talking to business leaders. Are business leaders, do they seem to have an appetite to, because I completely understand what you're talking about, the sort of looking inward sort of attitude that a lot of countries have. But against that backdrop, are there countries that are looking to do a bit more trade with neighboring countries as opposed opposed to Europe, the Americas or Australia. What would you say about, regional integration? Has that been upped or decreased because of what's going on this year? And to your point about the global supply chain disruptions.
Again, I suppose that was a little bit disappointing. You know, we would have liked to see from the survey that there's a lot more focus on trading with other countries, trading in the rest of Africa. And although over the last couple of years that has increased, you know, and we've seen a lot of countries saying that, you know, we understand that we need each other on this continent, the growth has been slower than what we hoped. And to be quite honest, even if we look at South Africa, there's a lot of big South African firms that have said, we are actually reducing our footprint in the rest of Africa. And there's a range of reasons for it. But I think one of the things is that a lot of companies, even South African companies, have gone into the rest of Africa thinking that we understood how things are done, specifically if you look at something like the retail sector, but we don't. We don't have a full understanding, and we don't understand that it's actually quite different than what it is in South Africa. So the integration has been happening slower than what we would have liked to see. And to be quite honest, a lot of firms in Africa are still looking at China and the US for expansion opportunities, although, you know, that expectation of growth in those markets are down from where it was in the past. And we are also looking at other options actually to keep the businesses going where we are. So it's not just about, you know, expansion. And the other thing that also struck me is that a lot of business leaders said that they're not necessarily, you know, considering mergers and acquisitions. And in fact, if we look at the money that is going around from other parts of the world, again, if you look at the US, the UK, and so on, there has been a significant drive to say we need to find a place for our money to go because we're not getting the returns where we are, and Africa is quite attractive. What another factor that we've also discussed, and that wasn't necessarily part of the survey, but was the role of the Africa Free Trade Agreement and where that fits in. And again, I think one of the key issues that we've identified is that there's a lot less impetus on that and focus on that than we would have liked to see. So everybody's talking about it, but you know, from a private sector perspective, there's not a lot that's happening at this point in time. So we would have liked to see more action, I think, in terms of working together. And the frameworks have been created, but I think government is also saying the private sector, you need to get involved now and start to do things from your side.
And against that backdrop then, vaccinations, where do they sort of fall in the thinking of business leaders? Are people concerned? Because I know that African countries have been hit by COVID-19 at, you know, various levels, some countries worse than others. I think South Africa is probably the worst hit on the continent. Do they factor in vaccinations as something to possibly invest in, or are they looking to their own governments to, you know, take care of that sort of thing? And the reason I'm bringing up vaccinations is I'm thinking about this regional integration that you're talking about, because the continent would probably go a long way if there was sort of, you know, more impetus to bring all of these 50 governments together to actually negotiate with the likes of Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, etc., just to make sure that supplies are adequate, as opposed to a segregated country-on-country type of approach.
Yeah, so I think one of the first things, you know, immediately when we started with a vaccination program, my initial thinking was that, you know, if there's private parts of private sector like mining that says that we can invest in vaccination, we should actually start vaccinating our own people. My immediate reaction was, why don't we allow them to do that? But then, again, speaking to some of the manufacturers of the vaccines, I suppose for them, And that's the reason why it's driven by government in terms of, you know, actually acquiring the vaccines. They said that they can't deal with the volume, and everybody, you know, coming to ask, can we please get our bit, and we would like to secure X, Y, and Z. So the focus has definitely been on negotiating with government and actually agreeing supply with government. But you are touching on something that is extremely important. Well, first of all, I think in a South African context, we had a look at what the impact would be if we roll out the supply of vaccines faster, and if we are able to do that significantly quicker than what we initially anticipated. And suppose we were able to do it, and I think, let's be honest with each other, the likelihood that we would be able to finish it by the end of the year is quite small. But suppose we were able to get herd immunity by the end of this year. We talk about a 1 to 22 benefit to the economy, where the cost actually exceed, or where the economic benefit of rolling the vaccines out faster actually exceeds the cost by 22 times. And that margin actually narrows, you know, the longer we take. So if we're looking at middle of next year, which I think is quite a big possibility in a South African context, it goes down to 8 to 1. So 8 times the economic benefit against the cost of the vaccine, just because it would take longer for us to open up the economy. And, you know, as an African continent, I think there's definitely some benefit in saying, well, we want to negotiate as a group. We want you actually to supply vaccines to us as a group. And I know that President Ramaphosa, you know, in his role in the African Union, that is something that's been discussed, but it has not been something that we've been able to do thus far. And I think that critical mass and, you know, getting the numbers of vaccines up would also help. And I think it would also, you know, I think in terms of the recovery of the continent play a significant role. Yes, South Africa has been severely impacted by COVID. That is true. And, you know, we're probably one of the worst on the continent, but we have to get everybody vaccinated, and we, you know, to get significant herd immunity. And that would be to the benefit of the whole of the continent. So I do definitely think, there is some benefits in us saying, let's do things as a group, and we have more power. And we are bigger and more significant if we do certain things as a group.
Perhaps as we end off, Lulu, maybe getting a sense of, you know, all the research that you've done, and, you know, we've spoken about, you know, the vaccinations and all of the different risk factors affecting the African economy, the regional integration. Where are the bright spots, you know, sort of that you're seeing? We spoke a lot about looking inward, the lack of regional integration, perhaps, you know, ways in which rollouts of vaccines could be done better. But, you know, apart from, you know, some of those dark spots from the research that you've done, where are the green shoots, or, you know, possible areas where you can say, okay, fine, these are positives that could actually serve us well going forward?
Well, I think first of all, you know, if we look at the PwC survey, there's the sheer number of CEOs that are more positive about the economy and where it is expected to go is looking really good. You know, so yes, it is off a lower base. Yes, we've had a tough year, but the outlook, first of all, I think that's the first thing that we need to take, is saying that is significantly more positive than it was in a long time in the past. So there's growth opportunities that we see. I think the second point is also that, yes, regional integration is happening slower than we would have liked to see it. But I think it's definitely there on the agenda, and it's something that CEOs and business leaders are considering as important. I would just like us to see, and private sector to get more involved in those discussions, actually, and to say that we're going to do things. We're not going to necessarily wait for government to actually create the space for us. And we are excited to see that there are definitely, you know, some of the larger businesses that's starting to take the lead there. So, and then, of course, yes, we've spoken about, ironically, less integrated countries probably came out of this a little bit better than others in terms of the impact on their growth last year. But I think all in all, we realize that, you know, there are sectors such as, for example, tech and digital sectors where we need to actually become competitive on a global scale as the African continent. There's a significant focus on that as well. And the other thing that I think is also important is that African business leaders are realizing that we need to actually invest in our people, and that they are the one asset that we have. And that also came out very clearly in the survey that we did, where business leaders say that we are investing, and we're investing more proportionately in our people than some of our other counterparts in other places.
All right. And then on the last point, Lulu, this one is more of a curiosity on my end, because in South Africa, there seems to be, I always tell this story that at some point, when I was at Gibbs, we had a presentation from a lady from Moody's. And she was actually chuckling. This was back in 2017. She was quite amused at how South Africa, you know, as a country, as a people, ordinary people are so concerned about ratings and all of that stuff, an attitude that's hardly seen anywhere else in the world. So I'm, you know, a little bit curious. Do you think other African countries or business leaders are as concerned with things like ratings, in where they are as obsessively as we are here in South Africa?
You know, there's a lot of our neighbors that don't even do the ratings in the way that we do, that don't subscribe to that. And it's a process that we basically allow. So the benefit, of course, is that if you do that, it does attract a lot of foreign investors, and it does allow them to invest in your country because they know what's going on. So the fact of the matter is everybody's in a worse position at this point in time. And I think, yes, while it is important to take on board what comes out of the ratings, to be quite honest, nobody's smelling like roses at this point in time, and all governments have seen an increase in their debt level. So I think we should just, you know, start somewhere and fix some of our issues, and the ratings will fix themselves in the process. I'm not saying that we should ignore it, but it's really not the be-all and end-all.
All right. So that was us with Lulu Kruger, who is the chief economist at PwC South Africa, giving us some insight. Firstly, just around some of the economic indicators that have come out this week. She spoke about the GDP figures and a little bit around the unemployment numbers, and also around the president's speech on Thursday, where he was talking about power generation and the general state of the economy. And then we zoomed out to look at what's going on the African continent, because PwC recently put out some data just around business confidence, you know, through their Africa Business Agenda 2021 report. And Lulu's just giving us insight into the thinking of business leaders on the continent, saying that a lot of them are quite positive, though off of a low base, quite positive about prospects on the continent, but also at the same time taking a careful approach to capital allocation. And also there seems to be a lot of inward looking-ness, if I can call it that, a lot of localization in terms of how businesses are doing things, and a number of South African businesses also choosing that they're going to scale down their rest of Africa operations. And also just touching a little bit about the importance of vaccines and what role all of that is going to take, especially against the backdrop of regional integration. So that's been it. Lulu, thank you as always. Thank you for being with us.
Only a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Great discussion coming through with Lulu just around what's going on in South Africa and on the continent. And I want to zoom in on two particular points. The first one, touching on the president's speech yesterday. The government can't come out and just say things like they don't think that they can meet the type of demand that South Africa has as it is trying to claw back the losses that COVID-19 has made on the local economy. So moves like this, it's a good thing, and hopefully those that can read in between the lines are taking on the messages just so that we can get a little bit more of the independent power production happening just to meet some of the shortfalls that the National Power Utility is facing at the moment. It is a hole that has been dug over many years, so it would be naive to expect that Eskom is just going to fix itself over a matter of months or you know, a very short space of time. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and if some of that work can be done whilst being aided by efforts by private players, then you know, all the better. We see a lot of individuals that can afford to now investing a little bit more in solar power, for example, you know, just on a consumer level. So if corporations, let's say mining houses, etc., can come to the table, you know, all of that stuff, all the better, because at the end of the day, stops in electricity production, as we've seen in the last week or two with all the load shedding, it's not good, right? It stops learning, it stops productivity, it stops manufacturing, it stops a lot of things from happening. It causes a lot of inconvenience, and for a country that is trying to grow, you know, once again, power and electricity are definitely going to be quite important. Also reflecting on some of the previous discussions that have been had around independent power and also renewable energy that we've had, solar, I think we spoke about the power ships and all of that. If all of that can be brought into the mix, it's likely to take the country forward. And then on the second point, just on regional integration, that thing is really necessary. This is not the first time that we've been speaking about this. It seems to be one of those themes that really needs to be touched on. And at the end of the day, if we can just accept the fact that Africa does compete, because as much as individual countries might want to compete on a global level, there is an agglomeration of nation states and countries, nation states, countries and states that have come together to create these massive trading blocks. If you think about the United States, yes, it's a country, but it is a combination of over 50 states. At the same time, if you look at the European Union, and if you think about all of those different things and the type of populations that they have to that they have at their command, then it certainly does make sense that integration on an African level would help the continent as a whole to compete a little bit better with the global economy, because it's all about, at the moment, the game is about populations, right? China has over a billion people, India has over a billion people, the US, I think 350, maybe 400 million, and then you're looking at, you know, somewhat similar numbers on the European Union side. And if Africa can bring its billion people together a little bit more cohesively, then you can do centralized, you know, vaccine ordering, that type of thing, trade as a regional bloc, all of that could possibly help African businesses and also that job creation and the general African economy to move forward. Before anything else even happens, the movement of people between African countries really does need to be addressed, the movement of people and also by extension the movement of goods and services really does need to be addressed, just so that we can stop having this reliance on the rest of the world. As Lulu was talking, there is that inward attitude, and you can see some of the policies that are being enacted in other parts of the world, such as the US, which is trying to become self-sufficient when it comes to things like battery power, semiconductors, etc. There is a move towards all of those different things, so we do need to address all of these factors if we are to take the African economy forward. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. We are going to be taking a little bit of a break in the coming days. We usually publish on a Monday, a Wednesday, and a Friday. As you well know, the 16th is coming up. That's a Wednesday next week. Our next show is going to be on Friday next week, taking a little bit of a small production break. Otherwise, that's been it for this edition. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live, that's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.